Station
867-1190
Near FM.
Charles Haughey said, Ireland is where strange tales begin and happy endings are possible. Good evening and you're very welcome to International Politics near 90.3 FM's Look at the World of International Politics. My name is Peter Carney. I'm with you Wednesday, fortnightly, 6pm, and we're joined again in studio by Azizi. Good evening to you, Azizi.
I am here.
Because no keeping
Peter,
you away.
Peter, guess why I have the gloves?
No, why?
To handle hot issues.
Very good.
This is Irish humour, no?
It is, yeah. That's definitely
what,
Irish
humour. What was that thing you just said about Haughey and the tales? Tales of stories or tales of animals?
Tales of stories, strange tales,
okay.
And happy endings across. It was a strange one. It's very kind of light and fluffy for someone like Charles Haughey to say. But
fluffy.
But light and fluffy. Yeah, there you go. So do you know the 23rd of October, any idea what political events happened on this day?
Did Elvis die?
No. Lots of people died. There was the outbreak of the Irish Rebellion in 1641.
Ooh.
It was called the 1641 Irish Rebellion.
Okay.
1917, Lenin calls for the October Revolution. And in 1993, the IRA bomb the Shankill area of Belfast, killing 9, and as well as the bomber. And the Loyalists retaliate a week later with Grey Steel Massacre. Significant births? Any idea who was born?
Elvis?
No. Peter II of Russia. In 1715, and 1957 was.
Are they running out of names? Peter II and 3 and 4?
They must have done. It's kind of like. Yeah.
Peter, like you. You must be Peter the 256.
They didn't get that far.
Okay.
The communists took over. That was the end of it. But obviously, in this day, as you know, it was it's the birthday of the 6th president of Rwanda, President Paul Kagame. You knew that, of course.
Respect to all Rwandans people.
Brilliant.
I don't know birthdays of any presidents, I don't think.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Not and even Jimi Hendrix.
He's the president of where?
Mm. Huh?
He's the president of where?
The president of Galactic Energy of Beauty.
Okay, brilliant.
Jimi Hendrix, you know Jimi Hendrix, of course.
I know of him.
Yes.
Never met him.
You met his spirit and his soul when you listen to his music.
Good. Okay, and on this fortnight show, we're looking at different places. Firstly, Ireland. We're going to be speaking in a moment to Johnny Harvey from the Progressive Unionist Party. He's the representative from Ormiston and East Belfast. And speaking to Johnny about a number of things, but in particular the flag protests that are continuing, as well as the standoff at Twaddell. Later on in the show, I hope that we will be able to play a pre-recorded interview with Shabwan Jabirin, who is a human rights activist with Al Haq in Palestine. So an interview with him. And if we've time, we may well have an interview from the head of operations at the European Institute for Gender Equality.
Okay.
Gender equality, you must have an opinion on gender equality.
Of course, I just released a video 3 weeks ago about gender equality.
Really?
Am I sexy? Did you not see that video?
I saw it. I didn't know that was about gender equality.
Of course it is.
Uh-huh.
It's about how men oppress women over the centuries.
Okay.
You were just too caught up looking at my beautiful sexy dancing. You must listen to the lyrics. I put them up there for you.
Must have been. Okay, anyway, so on to, and as you know,
before you talk to this guy, what is this orange is about in the north of Ireland?
Well, he's on the line now. He can tell you about it.
Ooh.
But he's from the Progressive Unionist
Party. I am scared
of
them. I heard they beat up people.
Did you hear that? Okay, well, listen, as we've already been introduced, that's Johnny Trotter. Good evening to you, Johnny.
Hi, good evening. How are you doing?
Good. How's yourself?
I'm not too bad, thanks.
Good. Now, Johnny, we're going to talk to you about a number of things. We've spoken a few times on the show before about the standoff in Twaddell, and indeed we're trying to get our head around the pronunciation of it. Is it Twaddell or Twaddell? We're not really entirely sure.
It's Twaddell.
Twaddell. Okay, good stuff. And as well as the British flag protest. Now, Johnny, What I've seen quite a number of times, what's come up, and from being up in Tweadell and having a look at the protests, the message is coming through from the loyalist Protestant Union side is that Protestant loyalist British slash orange culture is under attack. Can you tell me how exactly, is, and I'm assuming you're from that culture, how is your culture under attack?
Yes, I mean, I'm from that culture. I'm quite proud to be from that culture. And I think it's under attack in a number of ways, really. I mean, obviously, we have a position here in Northern Ireland where we have the Good Friday Agreement that was signed that created the ceasefires and created decommissioning on both sides and was supposed to lead to some sort of political stability. Now, with that political stability came a clause that said Northern Ireland remained part of the United Kingdom. And the way we feel that things are operating is that Sinn Féin obviously aren't happy with that, and they've been quite vocal about that even since the Good Friday, or even on the Good Friday Agreement. But because they know they won't achieve their goal of United Ireland anytime soon, they seem to be removing anything that they perceive to be British or orange from the face of Northern Ireland, and they're trying to basically attack the British identity and the British way of life. And trying to replace that with an Irishness. My sort of argument with this is nobody should be trying to attack anybody's identity or anybody's culture. In fact, to enjoy your own culture, you shouldn't have to attack somebody else's. They should be able to coexist.
Okay, now on that, particularly with the removal of the flag, I mean, it's well known at this stage that in other parts of Northern Ireland, as well as in parts of the UK, that the Union flag is only most places, not everywhere, but in most places only flown for anything from 17 to 24 days in the year. Belfast was being flown for pretty much 365. Now, if other parts of Northern Ireland and parts of the UK were only flying at 17 to 24 days, then what is the problem and how is it attacking your culture if Belfast does likewise?
Well, I think there's a couple of different arguments here. I mean, the first argument would be that Belfast isn't the same as any other council in the United Kingdom. The only fair comparison that you can have is the capital city, so London, Cardiff, Edinburgh. And if you look at their flag flying policies, the flag does fly 365 days a year because they're the capital cities of each of the countries that make up the United Kingdom. The next sort of argument would be that if we are going to have some sort of agreement around the reduction of a flying of a flag, then it needs to be a fair agreement. I mean, taking it from 365 and making it on, you know, very, very few designated...
But it was a democratic decision, though, to... I mean, it was Sinn Féin, SNP, and the Alliance Party, who are not a Republican Party, voted in favour of that measure.
Absolutely. I think, and again, this is the problem that we have, particularly in East Belfast, which is where I'm from, is that because of certain actions from our First Minister, Peter Robinson, and the DUP, there was a bit of a protest vote in East Belfast, and that protest vote went to the Alliance Party. Now, unfortunately, that meant the Alliance Party then held the balance of power, and of course it was a democratic vote within the chamber. Nobody can argue that, and nobody can dispute that. But it doesn't mean that the Alliance Party represented the views of their constituents.
But they were democratically elected, and we can call it a protest vote if we like, but you can't write the words protest vote in your ballot paper. A vote is a vote, and the people of East Belfast voted in the Alliance Party. Naomi Long, and that was a democratic decision. So in that sense, she was representing their opinions and their views.
I mean, if you actually look at the statistics, more people didn't vote than did vote in East Belfast, and that is one of the problems that we're trying to address. Even now, we're trying to get people registered to vote, and we're trying to stimulate them into, you know, end up getting involved in politics and into coming out and actually using their vote. There is a large sort of swathe of opinion in East Belfast particularly, that the Alliance Party did not represent the majority of people in East Belfast. And what we're trying to say to them is, well, if that's the case, you need to come out, use your vote. You need to come out next time and actually put people in there that you want to be in there to represent your views.
No, but in the meantime, or in that recent vote, I mean, she was elected and she cast her vote as did other people.
Naomi Long wasn't actually in the vote. Naomi Long was an MP. She's not a councillor.
Yes, exactly. What I meant to say was that the Alliance Party cast their vote. Even on that score, I mean, on the one hand, you were saying that she was elected as a result of a protest vote, yet she didn't even have a vote in the council.
No, I wasn't saying Naomi Long. I said the Alliance Party.
Okay.
The Alliance Party representatives in that council chamber.
Okay, and that in itself is one thing, but ultimately the Alliance Party were put in that area by people of East Belfast, but the response to that, the distribution of the leaflets that were in very close proximity in design and colour and so forth to the Alliance Party's logo in yep. that area, surely that could hardly be described as democratic in the sense of the response that it created, in the sense of the pressure and the protest and the intimidation that the Alliance Party were subject to in East Belfast.
Well, I think that raises actually a couple of points. First of all, the Progressive Unionist Party did not take part in the distributing of those leaflets. We didn't agree with that because we knew that was a big mistake, that to stir things up like that, and you're basically leading people, marching people to the top of the hill, and then they were left there by the Democratic Unionist Party and the Ulster Unionist Party.
Yeah.
The second thing is there, you mentioned obviously the intimidation on Alliance councillors, and there was an office burnt out, and there was a petrol bomb attack on a police officer that was guarding an Alliance office. We also don't agree with that. I mean, any sort of violence is wrong, and that's why we're trying to take up the mantle of actually politicising people and saying to people, we need to represent these views politically, and we need to do it the right way.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, just in... Sorry, Azizi's in the studio here as well. He kind of threw me off there. I don't know why. I had this question for you there, and he completely threw me off there altogether. But yeah, sorry, just something you mentioned in relation to respecting of people's cultures. People of the Republican tradition would say for years and years and years, be it gerrymandering, be it the pogroms, be it whatever, that their Irishness, whether you believe in the idea of a united Ireland or not, or whether you believe that the six counties stays in the United Kingdom or not, their idea and their identity of Irishness certainly wasn't being respected. And in relation to what they were subject to over decades and decades, hardly really compares to a democratic vote for a flag to be flown only on certain days of the year. I mean, you can hardly equate the two.
Well, the problem is here, I mean, there is a history to Northern Ireland, to Ireland and to Britain. You know, there's a history. There's always been a rocky relationship there. I mean, people will have their opinions about that. But what I'm sort of saying is this is about moving forward, and how do we move forward? You know, just because your culture has been attacked for a number of years doesn't give anybody a right to attack somebody else's.
Two wrongs don't make
a right. We need to find a way to coexist. We need to find a way that it is okay to be Irish. And at the end of the day, you know, Northern Ireland was, you know, formed in the 20s. So our forefathers, you know, people who we parade to commemorate were actually Irishmen themselves. They were British Irishmen. So there is no confliction between being British and being Irish.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a very intermixed culture, especially in Northern Ireland, because, you know, there has been that history of British and Irish identities. And there's nothing wrong with being one or the other, or a bit of both if you want to be. That's no problem.
And Johnny, just before I let Azizi in, because he wants to know a bit more about the North, what are you as a PUP representative and the PUP themselves doing to help people of an Irish Republican Catholic tradition live side by side with people of a Loyalist Protestant Unionist tradition?
Well, I mean, the one thing that you would never see is you'll never see sort of PUP representatives out protesting against Irish culture. It doesn't happen. Whereas a Sinn Féin culture minister, somebody who actually thumbs British culture, will actually turn out to protest against our culture. That's something you won't see us do. What we say is there's no problem with coexisting. I am quite happy, and in fact in my area we actually have Irish language classes. Relatives of mine have done things like Irish dance and things like that, so there's no problem with me or most people within our community with Irish identity and Irish culture.
Okay, Azizi, over to you. Azizi's dying to know a bit more about the North, so I'll let him ask his question and maybe you can fill him in.
Yes, I don't know enough about what's going on in the North, but this whole idea about the marching of the oranges, they keep on telling me that it is the British back culture trying to march into Irish cultures. And if we are talking about history of respecting cultures, well, maybe sometimes cultures can also be negative. It is possible to try to carry on a tradition that is not healthy for anybody. So if you can tell me a little bit more about the purpose of the marching and whether it's a good idea for either.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. You know, there are certain things that wouldn't be accepted. I mean, you know, some of the things that wouldn't be accepted would be, you know, sectarianism and actually, I mean, marching through, you know, if you were to march through the middle of a Republican area. Now, as far as I'm aware, there are no parades that go through a Republican area.
But what about the current standoff at Twaddell and Ardoyne and past the shops? Is that not the essence of that standoff? Is that it's through a Republican area?
If you actually look at the map of the area based on the recent census, there is a mixed area opposite the shops.
Peter is not happy with what you are saying.
Pardon?
I can see Peter is not happy with what you are saying. I am taking his temperature. His blood is beginning to boil.
Well, that's the good thing about it. We can all disagree, and that's okay. We can still.
No, wait. It depends on who has more guns. If you have lots more guns than us, and we both disagree, but you still have guns, we don't have any change. It's all about power, my brother. But okay, so he agrees with everything we're saying. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Good, yeah.
So basically, you are saying no more marching of the oranges in the Irish areas. We thank you very much for trying.
That's confirmed now. We have your word on that.
Thank you.
We have your word now that there's not going to be any more marching.
Excellent. Thank you.
What do you mean by that? I don't think I've ever said that.
Thank you. We have managed to convert one person. We need to convert
areas.
The rest of his family.
That's okay. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, Johnny. But the thing is that up in Twaddell at the interface, I mean, the police jeeps are holding the loyalist protesters back. The loyalist protesters have already marched through the area once. The standoff is because they want to march through that exact same area a second time. I mean, how is that an assertion of British or orange culture?
It's not about assertion. This is not
I think
this is half the problem is perception, and half the problem is there is a lack of dialogue on both sides. And the problem is when you get into dialogue, there are so many different groups who want to have their say and you know, from both communities who maybe don't agree on what the way forward should be. I mean, this is where we need to have some sort of conversation about how we sort these things out. I mean, Twaddell itself isn't actually an interface. I mean, unless you call a bar and some shops an interface, I would call an interface
the people of
where there
are
no living on both
happy.
Sides. But I think what we're talking about here is actually a bit of tolerance. You know, we need to have gestures where we can show tolerance towards each other's cultures. We don't have to like it. You know what I mean? We don't have to like what the other people do, but you can show tolerance.
I know, Johnny, but
I am willing to tolerate no more marching.
No more.
I will tolerate that. Thank you. This is brilliant.
That's the problem.
but Johnny, if you look at the statistics, I'm not a fan of statistics, but if you look at the parades that are held in the north, every parade from Orange parades to St Patrick's parades to Gay Pride parade, 60% of all parades in the north are of the Unionist Loyalist tradition. Only 4% are of the Nationalist tradition. And of the contentious parades, I think there's only 2% are Nationalist and a large percentage are Unionist. I don't have the exact figures to hand, but it's in and around those kind of figures. The people of the Republican tradition would very much say that these parades going through the contentious areas, I mean, they've already allowed parades march through their area once in that day. Now the issue is about it marching through on a second day, a second time in that one day. I mean, that's if it's been allowed march through that area once and it's right in front of people's houses and shops and so forth, surely that is people of the Republican side showing respect for the orange culture, and the orange culture wanting and insisting on marching through there a second time, even though it's clearly against the wish of the Republican side. Surely that's not demonstrating an understanding.
But there's a couple of points I want to bring up here. Again, if you look at the census, I could actually send you a map right now by email, and I'll show you the makeup of that area. And the makeup of that area opposite the shops is a mixed area. Above the shops is actually a Protestant area. Below the shops at Twaddell is a Protestant area. So, you know, the shops themselves aren't Protestant or Catholic. Those are shops, they're businesses. So, you know, they don't actually march through the Republican area. The Republican area is behind the shops.
So you're saying none of that parade goes through a Republican area at all?
No.
So, can I ask a question?
It goes down what they put it this way, whenever the Republicans put in for a parade to come down that road, they called it a shared road and said, why would any loyalist or any Protestant have a problem with this? Because it's a shared road. Mm-hmm. So why can't it be a shared road when we want to walk down it? That's my problem. It's not
Let
a problem
me ask that
of,
question, please.
As easy, Johnny, to ask you a question, Johnny. Go
I
for it.
I only
easy.
Have one question.
Yeah.
Has yeah. there been people unhappy because of those marshes? Irrespective of statistics of what kind of Cadbury chocolate gets sold in those shops, when there is marching, do people get unhappy? Are there, because my idea of marching is celebration.
It is. But
and I think Azizi's question is, though, are the people, let's say it's a shared space or whatever it is, are the people of the Republican tradition, are they happy or do they feel safe in themselves with that parade taking place there on that road?
No, I have no doubt that there are members of the Republican Nationalist community that aren't happy. But the point is they need to come out of their houses, come around the outside of the shops and round to the front of the shops.
What?
To actually be unhappy about it.
Mm. So you're saying the parades doesn't walk, go in front of any Republican houses or any Catholic houses of any description?
No.
Okay. And in regard to other parades that take place, what about the parades that go in front of Catholic churches, parades that have gone past Catholic churches where anti-Catholic songs and tunes have been played, and the songs about the famine, the sash yeah. and so on and so forth, they have taken place in front of Catholic neighbourhoods?
Well, for a start, I mean, again, here's a misconception. The sash is not a sectarian song and the sash is not an offensive song. The lyrics of the sash are not offensive at all.
I understand the famine song,
but the lyrics that can be put to that would be offensive.
Other songs that were, say, they're up to their necks or up to their knees in Fenian blood?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there are going to be songs like that that are offensive. I'm a bandsman. I play in a band. I'm very proud to play in a band. My band do not play any sectarian or offensive songs for that reason.
Hmm.
Your band doesn't, but it sounds like the...
But others do, Johnny, and they're played quite a bit.
Absolutely, and I can't dispute that. I mean, all I would say is then, you know, we need to look at what we're playing
so
when we're going past these spaces.
What are you in your role in the PUP doing to make that happen, if you like, to use that corny expression, to make that happen on the unionist side, on the loyalist side, to not just use words like, I don't agree with... sectarian songs and defensive songs. It's very easy to say that, but to actually put it into practice and to actually in many ways stand up to your own people and say, look guys, this is just not happening. Republicans do what they like, but whatever we do, the sectarian songs and so forth, it is not going to happen. And the what some
and
people might
that.
Yeah.
And we do that on a daily basis, and I personally do it on a daily basis, and I know our party does it on a daily basis.
And is it working?
This isn't just about challenging republicanism. You know, we need to challenge ourselves, and we need to listen to the criticisms that are there. And in fact, one of the things that we did in our party conference that just passed a week and a half ago there, we actually invited the editor of the Irish News to come and speak at our conference, and to have a nationalist speaking at a unionist conference in itself is a big step. And that's the sort of thing that we were doing, because we need to hear those criticisms. Mm-hmm. And we either need to have an answer for it, to be able to explain it, to be able to challenge the maybe any misconceptions or wrong perceptions, or at least to open up a dialogue and a conversation, or we need to change that in ourselves. Mm. And if you actually look at what bands have done, especially since the Parades Commission have came in, I mean, nowadays, nobody carries paramilitary flags in bands. You cannot carry paramilitary flags in bands.
Maybe not in the band, but there's quite a number of UVF flags up all over Belfast.
Pardon?
That maybe not in the band, but and I appreciate you're speaking from the point of view of a bandsman, but there's still quite a number of UVF flags being flown in Belfast.
Yeah, but I mean, here we go. We're crossing into a different area here. You know, we're talking about them flags that people put up. I'm trying to talk about the band and the parading issue and parading past people. I mean, if that's what we're saying is offensive, then that's what I'm saying is the bits that we are challenging and the bits that the bands actually have cleaned up their act. If we're talking about flags on lampposts,
yeah.
I mean, most of the flags that I don't know where you're referring to, but in my area in East Belfast, there were UVF flags put up. but those UVF flags are dated from 1912, and that was as part of the centenary commemorations of the formation of the original UVF, and not the modern day UVF. There's a big difference.
Okay. Listen, Johnny Harvey, you're a PUP representative in Ormiston East Belfast. It's not the first time we've had someone from the PUP on, and I've always find it very refreshing to watch David Irvine's YouTube videos and so forth. So hopefully we'll have you on again some stage, or even if I pop up there, maybe we could meet as well.
That would be a pleasure. Thank you very much for
Johnny,
having me.
Johnny,
okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks a million. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, both.
Bye. Great stuff. So, Izzy, are you more knowledgeable now on what happens up north?
No, I have a stomach problem now. Just looking at you.
Looking at me? You have a stomach problem?
You look like you were struggling.
I think... What?
I would have to say that there is doubt about whether many of the things he was saying were accurate and a reflection of your own reality and what you know about the North. That is what I am picking up from you.
Right, that I doubt a lot of what he said.
Well, not just you doubting personally, but I am not getting the impression that there is an acknowledgement of... the damage done by an imperialist culture towards moving forward in a positive way.
Yeah. I would agree with you. And I mean, on a lot of the...
I agree with me also.
You agree with you also. Okay, brilliant. That's good news. I mean, I think on a lot of the issues that he mentioned in relation to the area being a mixed area and so forth, I just don't have the knowledge of that area to say if that's right or if that's wrong. The fact is that... people in the area, as I think you were alluding to yourself in the question, Republicans, Catholics, Nationalists in the area are not happy with that particular parade, or even if we're not talking about that particular parade, the several other parades that go through Catholic areas. I mean, even from the Parades Commission here, as I said to you already, the number of parades, of all sorts of parades, from civic parades to Gay Pride to St. Patrick's Day, whatever it is, 60% are from the Loyalists / Unionist traditions, 4 from the Nationalist area, and of the contentious parades, 93% of contentious parades are of the Unionist Protestant British tradition. 6% are of the Nationalist tradition. So that in itself is stark. I mean, okay, you could say, well, it's because they have more parades, they're likely to be more contentious. But if the parades are contentious, I mean, really, why is it that they have to march through that area? Republicans are not saying that they shouldn't be allowed march. They're saying they shouldn't be allowed march through that area.
Well, I mean, the whole idea of using a parade, which is supposed to be a celebration, as really... really as a way of subverting another culture and oppressing another culture. If these are the figures and you're marching, just the presence itself is going to be provocative. And then you can use all sorts of arguments of moving to the future, moving back, looking at ourselves, accepting differences. I was getting very tired. I'm still getting tired. I am exhausted. Well, because I don't... What would make me less tired is a certain freshness... of acknowledgement,
right,
of the damage of the history of a culture.
Yes.
You want to cut me off? Go ahead.
You said you're tired, so it's probably a good opportunity to take a break. So we're going to take a quick break.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
It reminds me of the old Nashville saying, which is, happy songs sell records, sad songs sell beer.
That's the way of.
That's how it goes.
Sometimes you're hot.
Sometimes you're cold.
Steve, you got one for us?
Roots Highway, Americana and Roots Music with me, Stephen Egan, Saturdays from 5 to 6 p.m.
Tune in on Tuesday nights for 2 specialist music shows.
Tune in at 8:30 for Nightbeat with me, your host, John Casey. Playing the best in jazz, hip-hop, blues, electronica, and a lot more besides.
Then tune in at 10:30 for Pure Phase with David Bryan. The best in psychedelic, garage, prog, space, and the avant-garde. Hidden in classic gems from the 60s through to the present day.
Tuesday night, specialist music shows.
Oh,
my name is George Campbell, my age is eight.
There was always singing in the house. It was music just always on. He was immersed in his music.
As part of the Rocky Road Traditional Music Programme, Near FM present a brand new three-part series on the life of traditional singer and song collector Frank Hart.
He was a gas man, he really was. I'm so happy I knew, for lots of reasons, you know, apart from the singing. He was great company.
Frank Hart, A Life in Song, will broadcast on Tuesday the 15th, 22nd and 29th of October at 8:30 p.m. on the Rocky Road, only on Near FM 90.3.
He always had this thing about books gathering dust in libraries, and that's not a song, you know, it needs to be sung to be a song.
And they took him to Lisburn and lodged him in jail, and his father and mother, in passing that way, heard the very last words that their dear son did.
Community Radio for North East Dublin, 90.3. Near FM.
Stuff. We're back again. So you've refreshed
yes,
now. You feel
I
plenty.
Am fresh.
This might not be such a good thing. But
no more oranges. The marching of oranges. Don't oranges have a say in this?
Have a say.
They might not want to be represented by the oranges.
Who?
If I was an orange.
Yes.
The fruit.
Yes.
I might want to object to being used as a symbol of marching that has negative consequences.
Well, this is the
coconuts
point.
Coconuts might not object.
They might not.
Bananas, not sure.
You are you aware of where the term orange comes from?
No, tell me.
You've never heard of it? The province of Orange in Holland, in the Netherlands.
Ooh.
Seriously, you've never heard of that?
No, don't bring out my ignorance. Just kiss me with love, my friend. There are many things you don't know about Uganda or the aborigines. I don't want to expose you. Don't expose me, I'm going to expose you. Tell me.
Province of Orange, William of Orange, who fought Battle of the Boyne. You've heard of the Battle of the Boyne?
I have heard of it.
You heard of it. Okay, Battle of the Boyne. This is probably where it all kicks off, 1690. Oof. And there was a Dutch Protestant from the province of Orange in the Netherlands who came over and won the victory against the English Catholic. So there was no actually Irish people in it at all. Well, they were fighting it, but there's no. It was an English man against a Dutch man, yet the Irish and the British get so attached to it. There you go. Mm. And the orange has been, but even so, that's why the orange is in our flag and the Irish flag. It's a recognition of the orange tradition.
What's his name again?
William, King William of Orange.
He could have been Bill of the Banana.
Bill of the Banana?
Well, you know, it could have gone either way.
It could have gone either way, yeah. They may not have particularly liked that one, but anyway.
Well,
go on.
Well, you know, oranges, bananas, it's kind of...
Yeah, but you have to speak to the Dutch about that because they call the province Orange.
Why?
I don't know. Because there's another province actually called Holland, because that country's not... everybody calls it Holland. And I don't know why nobody ever calls it orange, because the supporters of the football team are always wearing orange.
Oof.
So...
Using sport...
as a metaphor, yeah, as a politics show, we shouldn't be doing that. Sorry,
No, it's good. It's all politics anyway.
Yeah. Well, the Irish president met a football player today, so maybe that's politics and sport meeting.
The Irish president?
Yeah, he met Pelé.
Cool, where?
In Brazil.
Ooh.
Or it could be in Central America, because he's supposed to be in Central America, so I don't know what Pelé's doing there.
Mr. Michael D. Higgins.
Michael D. Higgins.
I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. You, I know, I don't know, did you? No, you haven't interviewed him, no. Aziz hasn't spoken to Michael D., I don't think.
No, but my colleague Sami Mukaddam has interviewed him.
Ah, you know
Sami. And he launched two of his books, two of his novels.
Did he?
Yes.
He launched them?
Yes.
Where?
Waterstones at that time, and he has read them both.
Oh, like he didn't just throw them, he launched...
You can joke. It's not of my business.
You're doing the joke.
Sami
sorry,
might
sorry,
be man. Upset with you. No, I am not doing the joking. You are.
Well, I have a noise like that on my phone, which would work very well. I wonder what
this
come across. Hold on. Let me see if this works on air. You know, so just tell a silly joke again. Let's make that one again about the...
Hello, my name is Peter Kearney and I am... That's supposed to be funny. Ah, no, we want the sounds of...
That's
what do you call them, those animals in the circus?
The... don't know. People are going to kind of wonder, is this a politics show or not?
Yes, it is.
It is a politics show.
The politics of humour. How do we lighten things up?
Well, not to lighten things up, but actually a very serious issue next. We're talking about gender equality.
Yes.
So what do you know about gender equality?
I know that we men have been oppressing women for a long period of time.
Right. Why is that? I mean, is that a recent thing since the industrial age, or did it happen before the industrial age, or is that, if it's been happening so long, then I'm throwing too many questions at you here.
No, I can answer them all. I told you I know everything about everything that has ever existed. Well, it might have to do with something to do with physical dominance. But why is human beings are very complicated. Maybe because we are threatened by the softness of the potential of the feminine. Maybe we are still, as animals, attached to...
Why would men feel threatened by the softness of the feminine?
Again, maybe there are millions of answers to that. Maybe we're still caught up in the wiring of us being macho, physically dominant. You know, because if you look at the animal world, most mammals... Mm. Like tigers, you've got a hierarchical system, a triangle where the strongest male wants to dominate the other males into suppression so they don't object to him to having sex with the majority of the females. And that happens among dolphins, happens among a lot of animals. And
so the males will suppress another male because they think he's going to get too much sex off all the other women?
Well, it's evolutionary. I mean, I'm not sure how much evolved we are, but you can see it in the animal culture. You know, male dominance, physical male dominance.
So it's natural then.
Natural, not in the sense that something we support and we should accept. All I'm saying is that if we are going to call ourselves civilized, we better look at whether we are as civilized as we'd like us to think ourselves to be. You know, as much as the West, for example, criticizes many of the Arabic world rightly, but there is still a very deep degree of dominance of males on females in the West.
In the West, even more so than in Muslim countries.
Not more so. No, not more so. Just different. So
difference.
You know. But the question of why do men do it, I would say it has more to do with the... I think we're not as evolved. I think there are a lot of answers to lie within the animal world.
So would you say you're a feminist?
I don't like to label myself because I don't want to be a spokesperson for a movement that is very diverse.
Would you say then that Margaret Thatcher was a feminist?
I don't know what Margaret Thatcher is. I don't know if she's a human being. I don't know. You have asked me this before. I have never met...
I'm curious because I'm just wondering about, like, say that, and maybe not Margaret Thatcher, but women in those leading roles, then would that mean...
We have to look at power. How does power change human beings? You know, what is that saying? A little bit of power corrupts absolutely. Absolute power
corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Something like that.
Corruption, absolute corruption.
Power seems to go to the heads of people who come to power. You can see it in all the things like Harry Potter and, you know, all those films portray it from a fairy tale to a mythology. But the history of humanity does show that power does strange things to human beings. Now, there are shamanistic societies where the shaman or the leader of the tribe is invited to lead, but it's not something that he is doing out of personal power. Mm. It's a responsibility bestowed upon that person, and his job is to respect it rather than to abuse it. But I think if we're going to look at political systems, you know, which includes gender equality, we have to look at what power does to people in general.
And what did the shaman do? What did you say with the shaman?
No, all I'm saying is that... there are structures in societies, so-called primitive societies, where the leader of the tribe does not become a leader because he or she is trying to pursue power so that he can feel king.
Right.
All I'm saying is that there are systems, don't have to be dictatorship, doesn't have to be capitalist, where it is possible to lead but from a position of responsibility rather than from a position of hunger for power. Get me, Peter?
When you said shaman, do you know what I was thinking of?
Oh, something negative, is it?
No, I was thinking of shaman you. I only said it so I could use that thing on my phone.
You know what? We need to get you one in stereo. For
I think so. Anyway, listen, on gender equality, there is a Dublin lady from the west of Dublin, from Ballyfermot, I believe, Therese Murphy. And she's the head of operations at the European Institute for Gender Equality. And they're based in Vilnius in Lithuania. So,
whoa. Is that not here? She's from.
No, there's only of these. I don't really fully understand it. I think Therese explains it in the interview I'm going to play for
this
you.
This is live, so we cannot interrupt.
No, it's pre-recorded.
So we have to.
Yeah, we did it on Skype. And the quality is actually pretty good considering it's on Skype. And she said that there is, of these bodies, European bodies, every country gets one. Ireland has the Eurofound, which is the, you know, those Parliament buildings on Molesworth Street or something like that, European Parliament buildings.
I am ready to believe you blindly.
Everybody gets one. Anyway, Lithuania got the European Institute for Gender Equality, and Therese Murphy from Ballyfermot is the head of operations there. And Therese was telling me in the interview all about gender equality and the importance of it. So sure, we'll just listen in and see what Therese has to say.
Statistics that they collect, produce reports and analyse them, and present our findings and our conclusions, which are then used at the European level and the member state level to inform policy making. So we work with the 28 member states and we work with the European Commission.
Okay.
And we interact then with the other agencies, and we interact with the United Nations, you know, UN Women and CSW and all of those, and CEDAW. All of those.
Okay. And how important would you say gender equality issues are in Europe today?
Well, they've always been important. And when you look at that 51% of the population of Europe are disadvantaged compared to the other 49% who happen to be male, and the 51% are women, and they're disadvantaged in many, many areas. Because you're talking about, for instance, in decision-making, in economic decision-making and in political decision-making. For instance, the numbers of women there are particularly low compared to those of men. And that's nothing to do with ability. The ability is there, but they just don't get chosen. So with gender equality, it's not just fundamental rights. It is actually social and cultural influences that have brought about a situation which is different in every member state, which has produced a culture and a society where women are discriminated against with decision making, with their caring role within the family, in employment, in their use of time, in access to health, in access to education. They are victims of gender-based violence against women. They are also... It's even further complicated when you think of intersecting, how our lives intersect with age and disability and whether you're married or not and what your sexual orientation is and things like that.
Mm-hmm. In response to what you said about the fact that women suffer domestic violence, discrimination at work, discrimination for opportunities and so forth, now people could say, well, also men are victims of domestic violence, possibly not to the same extent as women, but they are. The access to employment, the pay that women receive on the tables, it always comes up as being much, much lower than men. Could it not be argued that women are just in jobs that are low paid anyway, as opposed to women being paid less because they're women?
Well, there's two separate things. And on the domestic violence, it's a tragedy when anybody is a victim of domestic violence, regardless, man, woman, child, it's a tragedy. And when you look at those cases that are reported, and when you look at the number of cases and analyse the situation, more than 90% are women. And you would find that in domestic violence with men, It's less often women against their male partners. It can often be male violence against, you know, male against male violence. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of figures in the, even in that less than 10%, which is still too much, mm-hmm. to know how much of that is intimate partner violence, woman against man or man against man. Mm-hmm. So that's just to say that. So,
yes.
And it is, gender-based violence is about power relations. It's about power and control. That's what it's about. You know, and it's a reflection of that and of stereotypes of how people view each other, of how people view their position and their position of power and authority compared to another and how they exert that. That's one thing. So then in the other, you're talking about, well, you know, isn't it a pity women just work in cleaning and clerical work and of course they get paid less. But you have to think about, well, in those jobs, what are the what draws women into them? First of all, the preparation for work in the education system, traditionally, not so much now, but traditionally, did not encourage them to take the roles that would be more highly paid, such as lawyers and doctors and scientists. They were not encouraged. It was not made available to them, traditionally. So now the numbers of women of an age where you could be promoting into higher positions are not there. When you look at then how the workplace is organised, what is valued in the workplace is really long working hours, presenteeism. Outputs and highly driven, where that does not allow, when a family comes along and you have family responsibilities, it doesn't allow for that to integrate both. So what you find then is women will take a position where they can, often where they can balance both their work life and their private life. And you can find as well that when women have a family, they do then become victims in the workplace, and they find themselves, because they're not available for 12 and 15 hour days, they're not promoted. They earn less money because of that. I mean, decisions have to be made in a family. If they have to move house, if they have to do things, who would sacrifice their job? Well, the woman is earning less anyway, so of course it's her. So she works even less. And that affects her pension, because when you look at the pension figures, the pension pay gap ranges from something like 13% to 25%, depending on the member state you're in. But the pension gap for women's pension is 40% minimum, no matter where you are. And that's very telling about our society and how it values women's contribution.
Yeah. Now, Therese, an employer might say, well, listen, I just want the best man or woman for the job, and I want the person who is going to be available the most, regardless of gender. So they make their selection based on that. Is that not still valid for them to do that?
Well, it depends what sort of a society do you want to live in. And women and men are equally available at different points in their life. So what we work for, we recommend strongly in our reports and in the analysis that we do here in NIGAN, we recommend strongly that parental leave, for instance, should be equally available to men and women, and men should be actively encouraged to take that parental leave. And then, and only when that happens, will you have a level playing field where an employer will look at people as family members, as parents, as carers of older people or whatever family members they take care of, and look at that. I'm going to employ people, and these people will have family commitments, and I need to allow for that. So this is how I'm going to construct my labour force and my workforce, my work environment, to enable them to have their work life and to contribute 110% or whatever to my needs as an employer.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and
so
this is the thinking behind it.
Yeah, okay. So on the European stage, how does Ireland, or I'm not sure if you have figures such as this, you might just look at Europe as a whole, but how does Ireland compare, say, with the rest of Europe in terms of gender equality?
Well, no. It's not bad at all.
Okay.
We have a report that we did just very recently called the Gender Equality Index. And you should look it up on the website. It's an amazing piece of work. Mm. And what it does is it's an indice, you know, a measure of equality in all the 28 member states. And it looks at the member states in the context of European gender equality policy and European legislation, and how those policies and legislation are implemented at member state level. And then with that background, it measures achievements in each member country on six domains. You have work and money, which is work and money and health and time, power and knowledge. So it grades every country and gives them a mark and all of that. Mm-hmm. And then when it does an average of all the countries, you discover that with regard to gender equality, all of Europe is only halfway to achieving gender equality, where one is no equality and 100 is full equality. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets more than 50%. Nobody. Okay. Right, overall. So Ireland, on some of the domains, it comes below the average, such as power, way below. It's only 20 instead of 100, it's only 20. Okay. And then in some other domains, it is quite high up there. It's just above the average. Now, it doesn't get too far on any of the domains except health, but that's an Irish situation. Mm-hmm. Right. But for instance, it would score, 40, 50, 60%. So on everything, it's either just below or just above the average. So it's not the worst by any means. Mm. It really isn't.
Okay.
But it still has a long way to go. With power and with the sharing of time, leisure time and voluntary time, time spent in caring and time spent in leisure, Ireland has significant divides in men and women and how they spend their time.
Okay.
In power, it's actually very, very on a happy situation. Like I say, it only reaches about 20 or something. But all of Europe, the average is 38. Okay. So the difference between men's attainment and women's attainment is there's a gap of 38.
Okay.
So Ireland doesn't do too bad at all in many ways. But the figures that we have in that report are 2010, which is in the middle of the crisis. So it would actually be a great deal worse in labour, in work, except for the fact there were so many men unemployed because of the crisis. But
okay. And what's the site where people can find out that information, Therese?
It's IGA.
Okay.
It's www.iga@europa.eu.
Brilliant stuff. So that's iga@europa.eu, and IGA is EIGE. So check it out. So yeah, that kind of so a lot of that fitted in with what you were saying, Sammy, it's something I was speaking to Sammy about once before. It seems to be the same as you were saying, Azizi, about gender equality, male domination, use of power.
Well, generally, you can quote all the tests. For me, we currently live in a very macho capitalistic society, uh-huh. driven by aggressive greed.
Uh-huh.
And that's a highlight of the gender equality issues, I think.
Uh-huh.
Pushing others out of the way and dominating. We've been doing that for centuries.
Well, still going on by the looks of some of the photos we saw on Facebook during the week.
Yes,
an outstanding photo. I think it's in Botswana. I'm not sure.
Tell the
public. I'm sure people have seen it on Facebook. It's on the International Politics Dublin group on Facebook. International Politics Dublin on Facebook, Peter's Politics on Twitter. Text here 087-6900-4500. It was a bit late for giving out that number now. But it was an absolutely astonishing, not in a good way, photograph of, I think it's on the group here. I think I put it up.
Tell the people what it is, Peter.
I didn't put up in the group, put up my own section. It's of Prince William in some part of Africa. Yes, here it is. And I got it off a guy called Anthony Sanchez, and it's called How Wrong Is This? And he's been carried around on some kind of I don't know what you
throne,
would call it.
A wooden made throne.
A wooden
by
tribal throne, and he's being carried
by naked, mostly naked,
semi-naked tribesmen.
Of what colour, my friend?
Black men.
Yes.
Four of them, and he's been carried around on this chair, and they're carrying him around on a kind of a platform.
They need a reality check. Are they so out of touch with the world?
I don't know. And it's hardly just kind of a quick one, because you can't get up and down in those things too quickly. I couldn't imagine. Not that I've ever been on one. But yeah, it really is astounding. I don't know what you could say about it. It's just so obviously out there wrong. It was never right, even back in the old days when it was done properly. It was never right, but it's still going on. It's absolutely astounding to see that picture. At the very least, do they not have any PR people? And, well, maybe this is better that they don't, because at least we can actually see what they're really like, that they find this type of thing acceptable.
Imperialism never went away.
What never went away?
Imperialism and all of this domination. This is on that. We're still on that same topic of domination.
Yeah.
Got me.
Yeah.
What happened to the Brazilians?
They're up next. They're up next, yeah. Actually, you know, I'm going to move your mic closer to you because it sounds like you're... Hold on.
But my voice is annoying.
No, it's fine. It just sounds like you're Jimmy McGee from Sofia in the 1980.
I don't know
World
what
Cup
that is,
qualifier.
But that does not sound good. Jimmy McGee does not sound good.
Like that.
Jimmy McGee.
Jimmy McGee, yeah. There was just all those, World Cup qualifying matches that we never made, and of course, like back to the old anyway. And
you need another hug.
Sports twice in the show.
By the way, did you see that picture of us hugging? We put it on Facebook.
I did.
You deserve a medal now.
It was.
You moved within 3 minutes from being frightened of another male hug to actually hugging.
It was the cover photograph of the International Politics Dublin group on Facebook. Had you been watching the page, you would have known that.
Ooh. Well, I was busy making tea and trying to get accustomed to the Irish culture.
All right, brilliant. Very good. Very good. But yeah, so no more talk about football.
Did we talk about football and I missed it?
Was politics. Sport is politics.
Oh, yeah. Ireland lost last week or something.
I don't know. They've all been losing for a considerable amount of time. Anyway, we'll leave that up to the guys.
They have not been losing. They have been generously allowing others to win because there is enough love in their heart. They do not need to win.
Indeed. Indeed. Do you think that football is politics?
It can be. Hmm. You know, but I heard the lovely stories about some colonizers in Australia trying to introduce soccer to the Aborigines in Australia about 100 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And they noticed that the opposing teams were not stopping. They kept on playing for hours and they were trying to figure out what is the problem. And it turned out that the teams did not want to stop before they equalized. They did not believe in competition.
Wow.
Neither team wanted to beat the other.
That's incredible.
That is beautiful, my friend. Mm-hmm. It is possible for sport to be beautiful without having to be overly aggressively competitive.
Right. Any particular headlines for yourself this week in the world of politics?
Anything headline. Apart There's from a line that. In my head. yes. What is that little thing about America spying on France and the France don't like it, don't like it, don't spy on me. Don't spy on me, please.
I think it's hilarious.
I am so upset. And on in Brazil as well.
The Brazilian president
canceled that trip.
She wanted to cancel all internet coming into Brazil from America as a result.
Oh, that would be messy.
It's all a bit farcical.
They would miss out on seeing America mess itself up.
Yeah.
Closing the government, close McDonald's.
But it's like everybody's spying on everybody anyway. So
wait a minute. You're not going to. What is the word?
Generalize? I mean, tear everybody with the same words?
No. I mean, as if it's acceptable.
It's not acceptable. But what I find unacceptable is that everybody knows what's going on behind closed doors and they accept it. But once it goes public, it's kind of like, we won't stand for that. But they know what's going on behind closed doors. That's what I don't find acceptable. It's like, it's almost like, in some ways, like doping at the Olympics, that everybody knows what's going on behind closed doors, but as soon as it goes public, everybody goes nuts.
Well...
And everybody knows that you've got a lot of evil dictators in the world, yet nobody does anything about it until his name is Robert Mugabe.
Yes.
So that's what I don't find acceptable, is that everybody knows it goes on privately and won't do anything about it. They'll only do something about it when it goes public.
Well... But the trick is that the trick is that when you know it's happening but you don't have proof of it, there isn't that much you can do about it. So it's when it comes out that people have the chance to act on what they felt all along. A very beautiful point that I just made.
What's a very beautiful point?
Well, very smart thing. You're not commending me enough today.
But say it again. Say it again.
No, I will not. I am insulted. I am insulted. If you did not listen to me, your audience did. I was saying that when it comes out,
yeah,
people will have a chance to act on it. Because when they can't prove it, they can't act on it very quickly.
Okay.
Get it. I'll explain it to you next time.
I'm going to leave you with the last word on that one, Sammy.
Bye,
so that's
Peter.
Pretty much it from us. Thanks very much to Johnny Harvey from
and
the PUP in Ormiston. Thanks very much
so
to Azizi, to Teresa
so
Murphy from
Put some
the,
of my videos on the website.
European General Quality. So from me, Peter Carney, and Azizi.
I feel
two
equal
weeks
to
time.
You. We
Till
will
then,
be hugging again.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
From Val Doyle to Beaumont.
Community radio for Northeast Dublin. 90.3. 90.3. Near FM. Move and just keep